You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three.
Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes in touches.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 0th percentile of rap snitch knishes. I'm your host, James Masita, a.k.a. the Provolone Ranger, and this is episode 249. On today's episode, we're going to talk about the Knicks wire to wire, 111-95, vicious sunning of the hapless Brooklyn Nets. Topics include Enes Kanter's superlative performance, Kristaps Porzingis' historic night from downtown. The point guard rotation was interesting in this one. The alternate uniforms were interesting in this one. The celebrities on Celebrity Row were interesting in this one. We're also going to talk about Hardaway's quietish night and a couple other things. All right, let's start the show.
Yes!
The Knicks destroyed the Brooklyn Nets on Tuesday night, 111-95, completing the season sweep. They won every single game against these bums. Let's get into it. The first thing you might have noticed is that the Knicks were wearing their... I'm not a big, like, jersey person, but I believe they're called the city uniforms. Like, every team has an alternate uniform this year that reflects something from their city. And the Knicks went with like a riff on the fire department uniforms. It had kind of like this trim that looked a little bit like reflective, you know, firefighter pant trim. It had a nice dark blue, like navy blue thing going on. And unlike some other alternate jerseys in the past, these are officially not cursed. Usually they're alternates. We've had those like really ugly bright orange ones. They've been hideous like that. And the Knicks play like garbage in their alternate uniforms, which makes sense. If you don't feel good about the way you look, you're not confident. You know what I mean? And if you're not confident, it's much harder to find success. You gotta believe in yourselves, people. The Knicks were confident in these uniforms because they looked great. I was worried about that fire department trim on the sleeves and on the pants, but it looked good. I really like the logo. I love the shade of blue. Excellent job, Knicks and Nike, I guess, whoever's in charge of that. Moving on, let's talk about some basketball. Enes Kanter had a beast of a game. I criticize him on this podcast sometimes for his ineffective defense. More ineffective than inefficient, right? When we're talking about defense. But he killed it in this one. You know, the Nets are bums. Why am I taking away from Enes? He killed it. In 30 minutes, he had 20 points on 8 of 10 shooting, including 4 of 4 from the line. The legend, Walt Clyde Frazier, loves talking about Enes Kanter's efficient offensive game. Like, every time he gets a layup, he says something along the lines of, "That's why he's so efficient, folks." And that actually came in the first quarter in this one. So Clyde wasted no time shouting out Enes for being efficient. I will waste no time shouting out Enes for being efficient. Excellent offensive game there. But what was incredibly impressive was 20 rebounds. He was just gobbling them up. Including 5 offensive rebounds. Excellent. You know, even more than his... I don't know if it's still league leading. I haven't checked that in a little bit. But he's right up there with like about 3.5 offensive rebounds a game. And I gotta say, I mean, I still think that long term it's best for the Knicks to move on from him. But the past couple games, he has looked spryer, more energetic. I don't know if he was dealing with injuries or just general fatigue, but he looks to have gotten a little bit of a second wind. And we're seeing more of that, like, Enes brute strength. He beats a couple guys down low, just uses his huge shoulder to knock him back like 3 feet and then get an easy lay-in. And we haven't seen that as much in recent weeks. So it's kind of nice to see. It's very nice to see a return to form from Enes right at the trading deadline. Right in time. He also had two blocks. He's not always known for that part of his defense, so that was good to see. That was a nice bonus. You know, he had it all going. But when I say he had it all going, like, he had it all going. He led two fast breaks in the third quarter. When I say led, like, he led those fast breaks. He got it. He was sprinting down the court, dribbling the basketball with pace, agility, and dare I say skill. I wouldn't count on that happening every night, but it was a delight to see. He had a three-on-one. He led a three-on-one early in the third quarter. Then again later, he led a fast break and had a beautiful pass to McDermott for the stuff in transition. And he recorded five assists on the night, which is a great number for a center. And then, of course, that classic Ennis charm. In his post-game interview, he said, "We show New York grit like the firefighters." So, you know, kind of hamming it up for the crowd. And then he said, "Tonight I felt like Magic Johnson out there." No doubt referring to his fast break play and his many passes. Then he laughed at himself. Doesn't take himself too seriously. I really do love Enes Kanter. I don't know, man. I can't shake the feeling that he's not right for our future. It's not a feeling. It's based on lots of evidence, in my opinion, on how basketball should be played in 2018. If only he would agree to come back for, like, a little bit of money. For some Kyle O'Quinn money, we could make it work. In just a moment, I'm going to talk about Kristaps Porzingis' career game from downtown. But first, I want to quickly remind you guys that you're listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you like what you hear, head on over to iTunes, rate us 5 stars, leave us a review. That's very helpful. Once again, Locked On Knicks. KP was another big story in this one. After coming out publicly saying, "Yes, I do want to make the playoffs. Yes, I work my whole life to be good at basketball, not bad." Right? We went over this in yesterday's episode. If you didn't hear my take on Kristaps' comments of tanking versus going for the playoffs, go back and listen to yesterday's Cliff Notes. Of course he's going to say that. He's a player. He wants to win. And he showed that Tuesday night against Brooklyn. He went a career high 6 of 8 from downtown. Yes, yes, yes! That's the unicorn shit. 7-3, hoisting threes. 8 is a great number. If him, Hardaway, and Lee each chucked 8 threes every game, I'd be happy. Overall, he had 28 points on 19 shots. That's excellent efficiency. He was 4 of 4 from the line. He had 2 assists, so we're sneaking up there. And a steal, always nice. Only 5 rebounds, but Kanter gobbled up every rebound in sight tonight, like Kirby. Remember that from Nintendo? The pink guy, and goes, and he sucks in everything in the whole world, and he gets all huge, like Louis Armstrong cheeks. You know what I'm talking about. But so he didn't get a ton of rebounds, but he played great interior defense, Kristaps. He thwarted a Brooklyn run in the second half. I forget if it was the third or the fourth, but it was like single-handedly by himself with a couple of blocks, altering a couple shots with this just great interior defense. Brooklyn made a couple of runs in this one, so they are starting to blur together in my mind, but he stopped one of them by himself. I mean, it kept going like Knicks 25, up by 25, and then Brooklyn would bring it to like 10 maybe. But Kristaps put a stop to one of those. Something I've noticed recently and haven't shouted out, we get lost in what Kristaps still has to do because everyone who listens to this show anyway knows that he can be a top 5 player. So we're nitpicking a lot. But he's done a great job of improving this year, staying on his feet. He doesn't fall for the pump fake nearly as much. You know, these guys are all human. They all do it from time to time. But he does a really good job of staying on his feet, trusting his huge 7'3" ass to block stuff without even really having to jump. So I just want to give him props for that. I also want to give him props for doing something that he doesn't always do. He set a really nice hard screen in the second quarter, freeing Doug McDermott, who couldn't hit the open J, but Kristaps did set a nice hard screen. I didn't see too many of those in this game, but one is a good start. Keep it up, KP. Add a couple more every game. You'll be doing good. I said just a moment ago, Doug missed the jumper off of that Kristaps screen. Rough night for Doug in this one, and rough couple weeks in general. I don't know if it's he's lost his confidence because Hornacek's not playing him, or if Hornacek's not playing him because he's lost his confidence and is not good, but Doug on the night was 3 of 8 from the field, 0 of 2 from 3, 1 of 2 from the line in his only trip to the field goal, and he had no other counting stats. No assists, rebounds, blocks, steals, turnovers, fouls, nothing else in the typical, old school box score. And he was the only Knick to finish in the negative when it comes to plus minus at minus one. I want to talk about Celebrity Row. Take a quick break from basketball discussion. I mean, this was just a powerhouse. There were I'm going to power rank the how many were there? 1, 2, 3, 4. I saw 6 on the broadcast that I was watching. So it's important that we figure out who the best celebrities are at any given game, right? Number 1, Edie Falco. There are days when I think that Carmela is the best character on The Sopranos, which is not to disparage the generational talent that was James Gandolfini. Rest in peace, rest in power, rest in prosciutto. But rather, is to suggest what a monumental performance Edie Falco gave us as Carmela Soprano. And what a monumental show. Easily the best show of all time. Don't come at me with The Wire or Breaking Bad. Those are both excellent. Sopranos wipes the floor with them. Edie Falco, tremendous. Just a generational talent. So she's the number one celebrity on Celebro Tuesday night. Number 2, Tracy Morgan. He's hilarious in both Saturday Night Live and 30 Rock and his stand-up. He stared down death, lived to tell about it. What an inspirational story. He owns sharks. That's also inspirational. There's some story about like his shark tank breaking when he lived in Manhattan years back. He's number 2. Number 3, Plaxico Burress, New York Giant, a champion. He is a champion, but he shot himself in the foot bringing a gun to the club in his sweatpants, and it torpedoed the Giants' repeat bid after they looked unstoppable the first 12 games of that season after upsetting the Patriots and ruining their perfect season. So he gets knocked down to Tracy Morgan for that. But you know what? Actually, I'm going to move him up to 2. The gun in the sweatpants in the club is like a new level of chill that I'm barely prepared to comprehend. So I'm not going to judge. Plaxico Burress, number 2. Tracy Morgan, number 3. Number 4, Luke Wilson. Say what you will about the Wilson family, but The Royal Tenenbaums, played out as it might be, is a fantastic movie. Wes Anderson, also played out. He's a great director. He's a little cute, but he's a great director. Luke Wilson, you're number 4. Number 5, Turtle. Sorry, Turtle. You're number 5. Number 6, last and also least, Ed Burns. I think he's a pretty big cornball. His movies are massively overrated, and I don't like his voice. So, real quick, celebrity power rankings. 1, Edie Falco. 2, Tracy Morgan. 3, Plaxico Burress. 4, Luke Wilson. 5, Turtle. 6, Ed Burns. I mean, when the Knicks are playing the Nets, you know you're going to see some sunning. So it brought out the celebs last night. I want to talk to you guys about the point guard rotation in Tuesday's game against the Nets. But first, just want to remind you, you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. There is a podcast for every team in the NBA and the NFL. If you like this podcast, why don't you check on Locked On Knicks? We've had Gavin Shaw on the show before. Locked On Nets, excuse me. Pardon me. Excuse me. I'm sorry. All right? Don't knock me a star for that. Everyone messes up sometimes. But if you like Locked On Knicks, check out Locked On Nets. Gavin and his co-host are great. They'll have a take on this game. You can revel in the sunning. Once again, that's Locked On Nets. There was lots of time for Frank Ntilikina and Trey Burke in this one. It was nice to see Jack's minutes cut, all due respect. The minute breakdown. We had Jack with 20 minutes. Frank with 26. I gotta say, I think Horny's listening. He probably heard me the other day when I said Frank's gotta be getting 25 minutes per game. He gave Frank 26. Thank you, Horny. And then Burke got 17, which was good for him Tuesday night. We'll get into that in a bit. Frank was feeling spicy on Tuesday. Lots of behind-the-back passes. He had a pick-and-roll with O'Quinn in the second quarter where he was just styling on D'Angelo Russell. He ran him off the pick with like a behind-the-back dribble. He showed some nice twitch, some shake. He doesn't always have that like side-to-side that you like to see in a point guard that can help you get into the lane and shake your defender. And then he hit Kyle O'Quinn with a nice pass for the layup. Clyde was getting on him for not taking it to the hole, but he got Kyle O'Quinn a wide-open layup, so I'm not going to complain about that. Then he had a great pass in the fourth quarter. There was a little two-man action with him and McDermott, and he kind of threw it over the top of Joe Harris's head to a cutting McDermott, and McDermott got the stuff. I think it showed his physical tools. He used his 7-foot reach to kind of like put the pass over the top of Joe Harris. It showed his vision and it showed his touch. It showed why I think he'll be a great point guard someday if he's not right now. Speaking of Joe Harris, I got to update it. I said he was the most hateable net. It's Quincy Azy. I fucking hate Quincy. He's involved in every Nick injury. He looks like a sailor. Like a shitty sailor. Like, not in the Navy. Like, of some boat that you're like, what do? You catch 3 shrimp in that thing a day? Like, he just sleeps on a boat in, like, bright yellow overalls. Eating cans of tuna. Fucking hate Quincy Azy. Let's get back to Frank Ntilikina. So, some spicy behind-the-back passes. He took some threes in this one, which is nice. He took 3 threes in his 26 minutes, and he made 2 of them. He also played a good chunk at the 2 opposite Burke, who was playing the 1. I mentioned this the other day. Go back to the episode about Noah and Frank and Burke for my full take on this. But I like Frank getting reps at the 2. It's good to increase his versatility on both offense and defense, and it's good for him to get court time. So that was interesting. We saw more of that look. And he had a couple of quick drives to the hoop, showing burst. That's been a concern. Does he have that top-level acceleration? I think he might. Like, he's looked really quick. He was a little out of control on some of those drives, but then he showed his vision, and he found KP for a couple of threes doing this. So a couple of driving kicks, using his speed, something that we haven't always said about him. So that was nice. We also saw some nice individual defense from Frank in the first quarter on D'Angelo Russell. He altered a shot at the rim. It was one of those classic Frank plays from like earlier in the season where he kind of let the guy get by him. And you're like, is this guy good at defense? But then he sticks with the play, uses his arms to be all up in the guy's grill. And he altered the shot, and Russell, he didn't block it, but Russell missed the layup. And then he tipped a pass from Russell to someone else on the Nets. I forget who he was trying to pass to with his octopus arms. That was also in the first. Something of note, something very interesting, especially in light of things that we've talked about recently, Frank was playing like doo-doo butter, freshly whipped doo-doo butter, toward the end of the third quarter. He had like 3 or 4 bad plays in a row. But Hornacek, he let him work through it. He let him stay in. Then he played the whole fourth quarter. I think he played like 100 minutes straight, which is a different issue. But I like that he let him work through some adversity. It's great to see. You have to hold players accountable, and if they're being bummed and doing the same stupid thing over and over again because they're lazy or they don't care to learn the plays, you yank them or whatever. But equally important, you've got to let them learn how to pull themselves out of a funk mid-game. You know, if this is the guy that you're going to ride with for your future, they've got to have the ability to start a game playing like doo-doo and then finish it playing like hummus. Delightfully creamy hummus, right? I'm kind of grossing myself out comparing those two because I love hummus. But you know what I'm saying. You got to be able to snap out of it. So props to Hornacek for letting Frank do that. And this one, in a game where they weren't really in any danger of losing, even though the Nets made some runs. Trey Burke, like I said, only played about 17 minutes. Not great defense in this one. He got blown by Spencer Dinwiddie a couple of times. Dorkiest name in the NBA since Herb Williams, by the way. Spencer Dinwiddie. Sounds like an over-the-top nerd from like Saved by the Bell with like a pocket protector and the glasses with the tape in the middle and like pushing them up and like speaking like this. Like, that's Spencer Dinwiddie. But anyway, Dinwiddie blew by Burke a couple times. Just not great defense from Burke. He's so tiny, man. It just severely limits his defensive potential. That's why I'm not on the, like, Burke is our point guard forever and Frank's our 2 train. He might be a good stopgap that's a little bit better than Jack in terms of being able to, you know, drive and dish, make some shots sort of vibe. But long term, that defense is going to be an issue. He's fighting hard to get over screens in general. He's showing some effort, but his natural limitations might be too much to overcome. He only had 2 points on the night, Trey Burke, on 1 of 4 shooting, but he did have 4 assists. He was one of the most ineffective Knicks, though, I will say, in this game. He finished even in the plus-minus game, and basically every Knick was positive by at least like 4 or 5 points. I would be remiss if I didn't wish Ron Baker a speedy recovery. Woo! This was a gross one. In the first quarter, Ron Baker, he missed an open corner 3. And I was like, oh man, Ron, have you hit a three in like a month? Then he had a great, on the very next play, a great defensive play to strip Damari Carroll, leading to like a 24-second shot clock violation. And I wrote down in my virtual notebook, that's like the Ron Baker experience right now. I think he's still net like an even player when he gets out there because he makes all these hustle plays. He plays good defense. He shows effort, but he like hasn't been able to score offensively. And I'm writing that down. Right as I'm writing that down, I see a replay, and the replay is gnarly. It looks like he dislocated his shoulder. I'm not an expert, but that's my... He swipes at Damari Carroll, who's bringing the ball up, and his arm instantly just kind of like goes loose. Just like flapping in the breeze like a windsock at half-mast. You know what I'm talking about? Like total wet noodle style. It was gross. As of the recording of this podcast, I've not seen official word on what the diagnosis is. X-rays were negative last night. It didn't look like he broke a bone. It looked like it's dislocated. So, I mean... But we'll see. Get well soon, Ron. That did not look good. A couple of small things to finish up before we're done. It was a quietish game from Tim Hardaway. 15 points on 13 shots. Not great. But he did shoot 3 of 5 from downtown. And he kind of was the catalyst a couple times when the Knicks were looking lethargic to get things back on track. He took a couple of fast break threes, which I love. I love a fast break three. I'll tell you why. Because it's not traditional. I like breaking with tradition. But more than that, it's effective. The best reason to break with tradition, at least when you're talking about strategies and sport, is because the new thing is effective. It's not just to be different. But I love anytime I see the Knicks doing something a little bit modern, a little bit different than, you know, the status quo from 100 years ago. And taking transition threes when the defense is off balance is so against everything that the NBA was about for years and years and years, but is so what the NBA is about now that it makes me delighted every time I see that. Tim Hardaway does that kind of thing a couple times a game, so I love to see that. The Knicks in general started off really hot in the beginning. I'll talk more about that in a little, actually. Jumping the gun there. Finishing up Hardaway. So yeah, quietish game from him. 3 steals, though, was nice. So he was jumping passing lanes, being opportunistic, jumping on loose balls. Not much else, but he was a +8. So he contributed. It was good to have him out there and his 15 points. I mean, this is a quiet game for Hardaway. A month ago, we would have been like, Lance Thomas had 0 points. You can't get by with 0 points in your starting lineup from one of your players. So I'll take that 15, all right? This was a joyous occasion, so let's do some Clyde highlights. Always like to talk about those. Hardaway got elbowed to the Grillington in, like, I think it was the first quarter. He's been getting banged up a little bit recently. And when Clyde was talking about it and they're showing the replay of Hardaway getting hit in the face, Clyde went, boing! Which I don't think I've heard him make sound effects like that before. And Mike Breen even called him out on it. He's like, oh, that's an interesting boing. I don't think I've heard that before. So that was delightful. Then he was talking about, they were talking about the full moon, and Clyde was like, they call it a blood moon because it's blood red. And then he was like, it's a pretty astounding, and he paused for about 5 seconds, and then he was like, happening. An astounding Clyde calling a blood moon an astounding happening. Like, I'm just extremely here for that. That's, you know, if you love Clyde and you don't love that, I don't know what you love about Clyde. Then he started talking about the Grammys. It was a laugher, basically, the whole game. So they were goofing around. They were showing the statistician. I forget what the guy's name was. Because they were talking about Isaiah Whitehead, who looks like one of those fish with human teeth, by the way. But they were showing the statistician. Isaiah Whitehead went to high school in Lincoln. He went to Lincoln High School in Coney Island. And Mike Breen is like, he's, you know, Isaiah Whitehead, the second most famous Lincoln High School graduate in the building tonight. And Clyde was like, well, I don't see Marbury here. He also went to Lincoln. And they were like, oh, I think the guy's name was Mike. And then they were showing the statistician and, like, making fun of him. And then Clyde was like, oh, of course, Mike. Like, I forgot about him. And Clyde's been, like, giving people a lot of shit recently. I think he's starting to lose it a little bit, but still love him. But he started talking about the Grammys after that. And he was like, I don't usually watch the Grammys, but I really liked it. Which was cracking me up because everyone was talking about how bad the Grammys was. He was like, there was a good mixture of rap and country. Very entertaining. We also learned that Clyde's preferred music is Motown and the classics, such as Motown, is how he put it. So, does that surprise you at all? So smooth, so wonderful. I mean, if you're listening to this and you're young, I know we've got some kids listening to this, 13, 14, and you haven't gotten into Motown yet, whoo, you got some good stuff ahead of you. Get into Motown right now. A couple of odds and ends to close out the podcast on last night's game. Michael Beasley had 13 rebounds, so good for him. Like to see that hustle there. Late in the fourth quarter, however, I was screaming, take out Beasley. He took a handful of just like ill-advised shots in a row, rushing bad mid-range jumpers. It's the first time we've been terrified of keeping Beasley in a game in a little while, so that's notable. He's gone a long time without doing that, but not his best game, although I do need to shout him out for those 13 rebounds. That's excellent. So he's contributing in other ways than scoring. Always love to see that. Always got to give people props for that. The Knicks as a team shot 50% from 3, 13 of 26 from downtown, which is 90th percentile. Well done, guys. But still, got to harp on this. They were only 25th percentile in three-point frequency. It felt like all those threes came in a wild first quarter when the Knicks and Nets were going back and forth, back and forth. The Nets couldn't keep up with the pace. The Knicks kept hitting shots. The Nets stopped hitting shots. But it was very entertaining for the first like half of the first quarter when neither team could miss. Lastly, nice job by the Knicks limiting turnovers. They only had 11 on the game to Brooklyn's 17. That's a big disparity, a big part of the game, a big part of the win. So the Knicks now sit at 23-28, five games under 500. They are 10th in the Eastern Conference, three games behind the 24-23 Philadelphia 76ers. If you're looking the other way, they are 12th in the Tankathon. They are 4.5 games behind Chicago for the 7th seed in the Tankathon. And that's I say the 7th seed because that's when the odds of landing a top 3 pick jump from 9.9% to 15%. So if you want the Knicks to tank and like really have a good shot at a top pick, you're kind of gunning for 7th or lower. That's up to you. I'm just letting you know where the Knicks stand. The next game is Wednesday night in Boston. Hoo-wee! Should be an interesting one. Knicks beat Boston at home earlier after Boston was playing their like 19th game in two nights. I expect them to want revenge and to be a little bit more well-rested for this one. We'll see how the Knicks do. They're playing a little bit better as of late, but they are playing, you know, Brooklyn and Phoenix the past two games, so massive, like, boulder-sized grain of salt with both of those victories. Still, they did what you expect them to do and just sun the shit out of them. So hopefully they can be competitive against Boston. That's it for today's episode. Thank you guys for listening. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, tell your friends about the podcast, follow us on Twitter at LockedOnKnicks. You can follow me on Twitter at NBA Injury Report. Be chill to each other. You know, join us tomorrow for another episode of LockedOnKnicks. We're going to have the great Ian Begley, ESPN's beat reporter for the New York Knicks. All right, that's it. Peace.